Today is Transitions Tuesday on Mind Talk. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Transitions Tuesday, we focus on all things related to the many different kinds of transitions we all have occasion to experience in our lives.
I'd like to introduce you to today's guest. Her name is Sylvie DiToledo, and Sylvie DiToledo is a licensed clinical social worker who saw a need some years back and became the founder and clinical director of Grandparents as Parents, which is a nonprofit based in Los Angeles, California. Sylvie, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Sylvie, I note that this is your book, Grandparents as Parents, is in its second edition. Does this mean that there are a lot of grandparents who become parents?
Yes, there are millions of grandparents who are in this situation across the country. And now there are relative caregivers, aunts, uncles, cousins, big brothers, big sisters who step in too. Help raise the children in the 80s, and I started this program in 1987, and in those days it was primarily just grandparents.
But it seems like it's growing over the years, is what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. It has mushroomed way beyond my wildest imagination.
Good news, bad news, I would think.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's good news for the relative caregivers who have a place to go and get support.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad news for the state of the world that this is a phenomenon that continues to grow where parents are not raising their own children.
Well, what are some of the ways in which grandparents become parents? Is there one way that's more common than others?
Yes. The primary reason is parental drug and alcohol abuse.
Interesting.
But there are other reasons, for example, mental health issues in the adult parents, incarceration, death, accident, illness, murder, suicide. So there are a variety of reasons, but again, primarily it's parental drug and alcohol abuse.
So whatever the reason, it sounds like it all has to do with loss, quite frankly, and trauma for the children.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't matter what age or stage of development, the kids are all experiencing a loss and a trauma and going through grief when they get to relatives' homes.
Well, you know, grandparents, you know, we like to think about grandparents as being retired. We like to think this. We know it's not true, but they're retired. They're kind of living in their life. They're leisurely. They've paid their dues. They're just kind of, you know, sort of rowboating off into the sunset. But that's really not the case at all, is it?
Not when you have to become a relative caregiver. The word grandparent, the children are robbed of the role of having a doting grandparent who can feed them ice cream and, you know, for breakfast and send them home after a wonderful weekend visit of spoiling. You know, now the word grandparent has lost its meaning and they've lost the role of being the grandparent. They're now the parent all over again. And the child, again, is robbed of that role of having a doting grandparent.
So it's
a loss for both generations.
Indeed, as well as their own parents, for whatever reason, that the parents aren't there.
Right, right.
Now,
and that's very traumatic for a child because, mm-hmm. you know, your parent is supposed to be your rock.
And then, for whatever reason, not so much.
You
give grandparents a list of things to do, a list of do's, and one of them that struck me was you tell grandparents to keep records. What kind of records?
Absolutely. Document everyone you speak to and what the date that you spoke with them, what they said. What you need a paper trail. Document the visits with the parents, if they come and they visit the children and they play with the children and pay attention to them, or if they come and they watch TV and take a shower and play on their use the phone or text.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's important to document everything. And I know that it's a royal pain sometimes.
Indeed.
But you never know when you're going to need to have that documentation for court. And it's better to have it and not need it than to not have it and need it.
Now, you know,
you want to document the children's behavior
okay.
before and after a visit.
Hmm.
you know, anything that's going to be helpful in terms of what's in the best interest of the child.
Now, I can see a grandparent who's, you know, certainly still dealing with their child, and maybe they're seeing behavior that they think is disruptive to the child, but they don't really want to document that. I mean, it's their child. They want to give them a break. They want to help them out. They don't want to document it. What do you say in those situations?
Well, you really need to think about what's in the best interest of the child in the long run. You know, the child is unable to protect themselves. You've done, generally, by the time the kids, the grandkids come to you, you have done everything in your power to help your adult children, because this is really the last resort. You do not want to take these children from their parents if the parents are at all capable of caring for the children. And so you have done everything in your power before this happens. And at that point, you really need to decide, although you love your adult child, they're still your child, who needs you the most? Is it an innocent child who's unable to protect themselves, or is it your adult child whom you've given lots and lots and lots of assistance to and resources and help and guidance? Now you have to really make a choice. And it's a very tough choice.
It is.
We've had grandparents who have had to put their adult child out in order to be able to keep the grandchild, and it is the most difficult, the most painful decision, because you always feel like, well, what if this is the one time they're going to get their act together and their life together?
Exactly.
And if I don't give them this one last chance, if they go out and hurt themselves in some way, the grandparent is going to feel in some way that it might have been their fault.
Absolutely.
But they're really put in a very big bind, especially if there is involvement with the dependency system. And that's the biggest issue. You know, if you don't have any involvement with the dependency system, then you really are much more at liberty to do what you think is best. But once the child is in the jurisdiction of the Department of Children and Family Services, or CPS, or whatever it's called in your area, that you lose the power and the control over the child. And it's the agency who is really dictating to you what can and cannot be done.
Gotcha.
And so you're really torn. Very often you are very torn.
Now, you also talk about, under your list of things that grandparents need to be aware of in terms of the dues, that they need to sort out the legal maze as well as the financial maze. And certainly if they're Child Protective Services or whomever involved, they're already in the midst of a legal maze, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
And,
yes,
and
most of the time, these families have no clue, because they've never dealt with this these bureaucracies before, and so they don't know which way to go and what to do and what their rights are, what the resources that are available to them. And so that is a really good point, and one of the major things that I say is important for a relative caregiver to get involved with a group in their area. Because the support that you're going to get, the guidance, the networking, the resources, the families in the programs become family to each other, and will do things for each other that blood relatives won't do.
Gotcha.
And so it is so important for a relative to join a support group, to know that they're not alone, that there's help out there, and that their feelings of being on a roller coaster are perfectly natural and normal.
Now, you talk about getting support, and you have created grandparents as parents in your area. For those who are listening, and I know we're kind of jumping ahead of the book, but for those who are listening who recognize that they need support, they want support, but they don't know where to turn to get information about how to get support, or if there are even support groups in their area, can they go to your website, or what can they
Absolutely.
Do?
Absolutely. Please go to our website. It's www.grandparentsasparents.org.
Okay.
And you can find a list of resources. And please, our number is 818-264-0880. Please call us. We are happy to help you. We are happy to link you up with a group in your area. We are happy to help you start a group if there is nothing in your area.
Okay, wonderful.
We really want to reach out to as many relatives as we can to provide and offer support. and resources, because we know that this is a life-changing
Absolutely.
Journey. And we want to be there to support anyone and everyone that we can and to outreach to as many families as we can.
Can you give that phone number again?
818-264-0880. Again, 818-264-0880.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. And I will ask you for that again before we end today's conversation, and we'll also post it online for you as well. Let's talk about the emotional roller coaster. It's an emotional roller coaster for the grandparent, for the parent very likely, as well as for the child. To the grandparent whose life is all of a sudden upside down and different from what they thought it would be. Are there any things in particular that you want that grandparent to really think about in terms of their own self-care? I know we've talked about support groups and documenting. Is there anything else, or are those two really the prime pieces of resource that would be useful for a grandparent?
I think those are the prime resources. However, it's really important that, you know, and I know that it's easier said than done,
yes,
but to try to carve out a little bit of time just for you, you know, to regroup and maybe to talk with a friend or meet another grandparent for coffee or for a walk or, you know, something that you do for you, because all of a sudden you find that you are doing and doing and doing for the kids,
right,
and you've neglected your own needs, and you've got to do something to fill yourself up so that, and one of those things is by going to a support group, and you will get something to hold on to till the next week. And our groups are very non-traditional, and our facilitators are available even outside of group time, because we know that crises don't happen between 9 and 5.
Right.
They happen 24/7.
Yeah.
And so our program is unique in that way, in that we are always available to our families. And also within the program, the group, the families know who they can call in the group for support. You know, we have activities once a month for all the relative caregivers, the families, so that it gives the kids a opportunity to see that they're not the only ones who are being raised by relative caregivers.
That's so
important. And it
gives
the caregivers to an opportunity to socialize with other caregivers and people who are experiencing the same thing that they're going through. And, you know, we pride ourselves on our program being very non-critical, non-judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
So grandparents really can come and talk about feeling that they're at the end of their rope.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, they wish their adult child would disappear because the impact of those visits is creating such turmoil and trauma and drama for the child that, you know, the parent makes promises that they don't keep, you know, and the child is the one who's thoroughly affected by this.
Right, right.
And then the grandparents have to deal with the fallout of the behavior of the child.
Of the child and the grandchild, right.
Where they can come and they can talk and feel that they're completely understood.
You make a point in the book that when people think about grandparents as parents, that there are some biases that come up, and that people make assumptions about how that came to be. But you say that, and I'm quoting you, every grandparent is only one or two tragedies away from raising a grandchild. Every grandparent.
Yep. Absolutely. You never know when that call is going to come. You know, that there's been a car accident, or your daughter or your son has been arrested and the children are at their police station, and if you don't come and get them, we are going to call the Department of Children and Family Services or Child Protective Services, and the children will be placed in foster care. And you have a split second to make that decision.
And which is huge. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about grandparents as parents. My name is Pamela Brewer, and you're listening to Mind Talk. We'll return in a moment.
Thank you.
Dr. Pamela Brewer, and you are listening to Mind Talk in a continued conversation with Sylvie DiToledo, who is the author of Grandparents as Parents and the founder and clinical director of Grandparents as Parents, Inc. out of Sylvie, where are you guys located?
We're in Southern California.
Okay. Before the break, you and I were just talking about the fact that a grandparent becoming a parent crosses racial, economic, religious, you name it, crosses all the barriers, that everyone who is a grandparent at any moment could find themselves in the position of being a parent. And I think that on some levels is really kind of chilling, because so many times people think, well, I've done what I need to do. My children would never be in this position. But again, not true necessarily.
Well, it's not. I mean, you know, anyone could have a car accident.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you're put in this situation because of a reason that is, you know, drugs and alcohol are
okay.
The primary reason, but it's not always that way. And so, you could get that phone call. And I'd like to make a point, too,
sure.
That the book is not just for relative caregivers, but it's also geared towards professionals who can become sensitized to the needs and concerns and what relative caregivers go through. And I have a co-author, Deborah Edler Brown, who is really the journalist and who did a fabulous job.
Really helped put it on paper.
I was so lucky that the second time around, 20 years after the first edition, I was fortunate enough to have the same co-author, the same publisher, the same editor. So it really made the process very, very enjoyable a second time around.
And you know, again, good news, bad news. It's such an important book. And you know, as I was talking to a couple of colleagues about the fact that I was going to be talking to you, they were like, oh, my goodness, I need that book for my clients. You know, I mean, it's just such a needed publication. So I am delighted, not so great that the need exists, but delighted that you have stepped in and filled the need yet again. Let me ask you this. You talk in this story about an adult child who returns home to live with her parents with her child. Is that a common occurrence?
Yes, that is a common occurrence when there is possibly a divorce.
Okay.
Or unemployment, you know, they become unemployed, so there are financial reasons. I mean, there are more and more families. It's becoming tougher and tougher to support yourself in this economy. And so there are times when a child will move home with the parents and bring their children as well. But in those cases, it's not so much where the relatives are taking over, because the parent has done something that made it unsafe for the child to remain with them.
Mm-hmm. But if you've got a situation where perhaps there's some illness, there's a psychiatric issue going on, and the parent and the child is living in the home with the grandparents, is that a situation where the grandparent becomes a co-parent with the child or not?
Yes,
or no?
Yes, especially when if the adult child is non-compliant with the medication.
Okay.
And sometimes they'll leave and not come back for days or weeks or months on end. But there are times when that it becomes necessary for the grandparent to really step in and become the parent. You know, if the adult child is not doing what they need to do to remain stable on medication and are unable to parent, and are really not there emotionally or physically for the child, the grandparent definitely needs to step in and become more of the active parent role.
Now, I would think that would be really complicated. I mean, it's complicated enough to be the grandparent who's really functioning as the primary parent, and the primary parent is not living in the home. But if the primary parent or parents are living in the home with the grandparent, but yet the grandparent has taken on the role of the primary parent, isn't that kind of confusing for everybody?
Well, it's very difficult because the boundaries are blurred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the child doesn't know if they should listen to their mommy or their daddy or their grandma or their grandpa. And so the boundaries are blurred, and it's very tough for a child. I mean, we have we have families where the grandparents have adopted the child, and then the parent got their act together but didn't have a place to live, so they came home to live, at least temporarily. And, you know, it becomes very confusing for the child because they really don't know where they stand.
Well, and in that case, the grandparent is the parent, and the parent is no longer. At least,
is the sibling.
Yeah.
The grandparent. The parent is really the sibling.
Right.
And depending on the age where it all transpired, does the child remember the parent as being the parent, or was the child a baby? Or, you know, so it brings in a lot of different aspects that may require some outside counseling for the family as well to help deal with the situation.
Would you say that outside counseling is routinely advised whenever a grandparent or a other than the biological parent's relative becomes the caregiver, or no? Is it just on a case-by-case basis?
I think it's by individual basis.
Okay.
I think that you need to really look at the impact on the child and what his or her patterns are, behavioral patterns, and are there any regressions, or was the child spending a lot of time at grandma's house anyway?
Okay.
And so it was just sort of a natural transition.
Mm-hmm.
Or was the child taken from parents at age 10 when he was or she was already in an environment where they knew the parent as the parent? So really you need to look at each case and each family individually.
Okay.
And see how the child is doing.
You know, no.
But it's imperative for the relatives to get the support immediately.
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 Okay, in whatever way that makes sense to them.
Right.
You know, regardless of the reason why the grandparent or other relative is taking care of this child, the relative, the grandparent, has got some real feelings about the parent. Is it important to share your views about the child's parent to the child, or do you keep them to yourself? Do you paint a pretty picture? How do you negotiate that with your grandchild?
No, it's really important not to badmouth the parent, because the child generally wants to be with the parent regardless of the treatment that he or she received in the home of the parent.
Okay.
And so it is really important not to badmouth the parent. And the child, as they grow, will really be able to see for themselves what the parent is or is not doing.
Hmm.
And so it is just definitely, it's imperative not to badmouth the parent, because then the child will become angry at you.
Okay.
For saying things about their parent that they love.
Gotcha. Well, on the other side of that, does the grandparent try to rewrite the facts and make the parent perhaps different than they are, or less absent or less disturbing than they are to the child?
I think it's important for the child to know to see the truth.
Okay.
But that's where the parent is going to get a lot of guidance and a lot of support in group, because for a parent to realize that they raised a child who's not capable of caring for their grandchild, and seeing the impact of that behavior on the grandchild is very painful.
Yeah, it's hard.
Even though the adult is making their own choices, it's not the way that the grandparent raised that child.
Right. And so it does become very complicated for the grandparent as well as the child.
Absolutely. And so the grandparent really needs a place where they can talk about their feelings in a non-judgmental, non-critical environment.
You talk about breaking the pattern of enabling. What do you mean by that?
That sometimes it's important to be really tough with your adult children and not to continually let them extort things from you. You know, we have so many families who... Just because you love your child and you keep thinking that if I do this one more thing, this will be what really turns them around.
Right.
And the adult children are very manipulative and are able to extort, you know, and use their child sometimes as a pawn to get what they want from the grandparents.
Now, you're using some pretty strong language, manipulative, extort. Say more about that.
I can't tell you how many families I've worked with who have set their adult children up in apartments and co-signed for them and, you know, really taken care of them. And then they go off on a drug binge and they sell everything or they destroy the apartment or they, you know, we've had adult children who've set houses that belong to their parents on fire. You know, because they were angry because the parent finally said, you know, you need to get a job or you need to do something. You need to start contributing. You know, we can't continue to support you and support the children. And oftentimes, if there is no legal protection for the grandparent of the child, the parent will use the child as a pawn to get from their parent what they want, because the grandparent is afraid that the parent will take the child and they'll go from pillar to post, and they know that their child doesn't have a place to live, and so they're going to be in different places and on the street, and they want to protect their grandchildren. They don't want to see their grandchildren living like that, and in order to protect the grandchildren, they will continually give and give and give to their adult children because they're very frightened, and rightfully so. The adult child could bring the police and say, I want my child, and my mother's not giving him back to me.
Ah. So, in fact, the grandparent who doesn't have any legal protections really is at the mercy of his or her child if that's what they choose to do.
And so if the child's whereabouts are unknown for any length of time, it's really important at that point at least to try and get legal guardianship of the child.
Okay. So if the adult, if the child of the grandparent, you're saying if the parent of the grandchild is missing, you want to take that window as a time to get guardianship? Is that difficult to do?
No, it's not really difficult to do if the parent's whereabouts are unknown. And if nobody is going to contest it, at least in California, you can fill out the paperwork and yourself. You don't need a lawyer. You need a lawyer if it's going to be contested.
Okay.
But the best time to do it is if the adult child is, the whereabouts are unknown.
Okay.
They've disappeared again for, you know, weeks at a time.
Okay.
And then you at least could get temporary guardianship and document, because that is what is going to help you the most in court. Especially if you're trying to get legal guardianship, you know, that the parent hasn't been around in 3 months and there have been no phone calls and no emails, and, you know, they want these children protected.
You know, it's interesting, and we're going to take a break, but when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk with you a little bit more about the difference between helping your adult child to become a better parent of your grandchild and enabling your adult child to become a less better parent, if you will, of your grandchild. So we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we will continue this conversation with Sylvie DiToledo, who is the author of Grandparenting, Grandparents as Parents, and also the founder and clinical director of Grandparents as Parents Incorporated, which is based out of Los Angeles, California. And there's a wonderful website. We'll give you all that information when we come back. Don't go away. Welcome back to this edition of Mind Talk. My name is Pamela Brewer, and we continue our dialogue with Sylvie DiToledo as we talk about grandparents who become parents. Sylvie, just before the break, I said that I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the difference between helping your adult child and enabling your adult child. And you gave the example of a grandparent who might put their child up in an apartment. I can see any number of grandparents saying, well, if my child has, you know, just come through rehab or hasn't been able to find suitable employment, I can just help them by paying their rent for a while. But is that help or is that enabling? What's the difference?
I think that if you truly feel like you want to try and help your child again, that it really, you have to look at the length of time this has been going on and the patterns. Have there been a lot of relapses? Or is this the first time? And you're really, you have to look at what efforts your adult child is making.
Okay.
And I think that part of it just has to do with the length of time and how many times you've done this.
All right. So if this is chronic for you, if you're always sort of helping out, that's just enabling and it's not doing anybody any good.
Right.
Okay. What if you're afraid of your adult child? I mean, literally, either physically afraid for yourself, or as you mentioned earlier, afraid that your adult child is going to remove your grandchild and put him or her in unsafe circumstances. What do you do then?
You may have to get a restraining order.
Huh.
We've had lots and lots of grandparents who their children are drug addicts and have been behaving erratically and, you know, threatening them or coming and, you know, being very destructive in the home or aggressive, and they've had to get restraining orders. You know, it's a very, you know, difficult decision to make against your child.
It's painful.
But at times, it's the drugs that are talking and not really the child that you raised.
Okay. And it's just so painful for everyone involved.
Absolutely.
Let's say that you are, most parents are at least older than their children. We get that. But let's say than their grandchildren. But let's say that you as a grandparent are significantly older than your grandchild. The world is really different now from the way it was perhaps when you were coming up as a little one or certainly when you were parenting your own child. There can be a huge divide between the grandparents' awareness of today's society and what the child actually has to live with. Do you find that is a problem at any point?
Yes, it is, because the kids say to their parents, their grandparents, you're old-fashioned, you don't understand me, you're too strict, and that's why it's really a good idea to get involved with a support group,
okay,
as well as reading the book, because you'll find that there are resources, there's guidance, there are suggestions, and there are others who will listen to you and say, yes, maybe you're a little over this or, you know, a little overprotective in this area, maybe loosen up a little here, but no, here you can't loosen up. It's really important to stay right where you are. You know, there are some things that are negotiable,
right,
in parenting, and some
mm-hmm.
things that are not negotiable. And sometimes you ask yourself, you're not sure which way to go,
okay,
because you haven't parented in such a long time, and the world is completely different. And that's why 20 years after the first edition, we did a second edition,
mm-hmm.
which now includes a lot of things about regarding technology, which was not available, you know, 20 years ago.
Sure.
We didn't have the kinds of phones and texting and computers and, you know, social media that we have now.
Do you think that with the addition of all of the social media, for example, things that are available, does that make a grandparent's life more difficult or easier, do you think, in terms of parenting?
I think it makes it more difficult in terms of parenting, because children who are not supposed to have contact, possibly by the courts, with their parent, the parent has been able to reach them through social media.
Hmm.
And through texting, and, you know, so it makes it, especially if the grandparent is not savvy to all of these new technologies, it makes it very difficult for them, you know, to have as much control as they should have.
So what
and
I
again,
hear,
and this is something that, you know, we have grandparents that are in their 40s, and we have grandparents in their 80s.
Exactly.
So it really is different for different families with different age relative caregivers.
But, you know, what I hear continually is the value of a support group to go to with so many of these what will become new daily living experiences for this grandparent who's newly minted as a parent.
Right, and your whole lifestyle changes.
Indeed.
And so you have to have a place where you can come and talk about that. It's a loss. It's, you know, a grieving process, not just for the loss of your adult child, but for the loss of the life that you had thought you were going to be leading in your retirement years, for example.
Right.
You know, and your lifestyle changes, your financial situation changes, your marriage may change. You know, the one spouse had looked forward to traveling and, you know, hobbies and doing impromptu things. And now the other one is saying, well, we can't because we have these three children and we have to get a babysitter. And, you know, people who are not in this situation really don't understand the whole life-changing experience that this becomes. And that relatives really should be recognized for the what they're doing to keep their families together, and they're not recognized enough. I mean, I think that grandparents deserve a gold medal for what they're doing.
Oh, they're absolutely putting
their whole lives on hold for these children to keep them safe, to keep them together, because otherwise if these children went to foster care, depending on the ages and the sexes of the children, the siblings might not even be together.
That's true. That's an excellent point. They might not ever see each other again through no reason of their own, clearly. So the parents are actually able to save these children's lives. And you're right, I don't think they get enough credit and support for what they're actually doing, and may not give themselves enough credit. I mean, a lot of times I think you'll hear a grandparent say, well, that's what I'm supposed to do. You know, this is my grandchild. What else was I going to do? And not really acknowledge for themselves what they are doing.
And that's why grandparents as parents exist, to be a one-stop shop for relative caregivers and to help deal with basic needs as well as emotional needs and social needs.
And again, I want you to give out that website and phone number in a few moments. But let me pose another scenario to you. You've got a grandparent. You talk about this in the book. You've got a grandparent who's taking care of a child or children, and their adult child keeps having children. Now, you as the grandparent, you're taking care of whatever child or children they've had, but now they're having more. As a grandparent, do you take care of them too, or what do you do with that?
Well, we have grandparents who have multiple children, grandchildren. You know, that's really a decision that you need to make for yourself, depending on your age, your health, your financial situation, your housing situation, the amount of challenges, emotional, behavioral, academic, psychological, that the kids that you already have are experiencing. So that's really an individual decision, which a therapist or a group can help you, you know, set limits to what you can do and to know what your limits and your boundaries are. You know, some grandparents just continue to take the children and they continue to have more children, and you know you have to really look at what your own personal situation is
and what you can tolerate and still be reasonably healthy yourself.
Right.
One of the points that you make in your book, Grandparents as Parents, is that you, as a grandparent, you've got to remember realistically what your age is and what you are realistically able to do.
Right, because if you don't take care of yourself first, you are not going to be able to physically and emotionally take care of all the children that, you know, your grandchildren. You have to take care of yourself and fill yourself up. You have to take care of yourself medically and emotionally and physically so that you can be there as a whole person for the grandchildren who, again, come to you with a myriad of challenges
Absolutely.
And emotions.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I wonder about is for the children or the child who's living with grandparents when they go to school, because we all know how not so charming other children can be to other children. So if you've got your grandchild is going to school and getting grief because he or she's living with you as a grandparent versus the parents, what does a grandparent do with that? And would you recommend that a grandparent go to the school and tell the school the child's living circumstances?
Absolutely. The school really needs to know as much as you feel comfortable, because the more they know, the more they can be there to help and support the child.
Okay.
Who may come to school on a Monday morning sulky and sullen because they had, you know, a visit was planned with a parent who didn't show up on Sunday afternoon. And so the teacher especially needs to know if she or he needs to give a little more attention or a little more space to that child.
Okay.
And to know why that child is acting differently.
Okay. So it really is important to share with the school as much as you can.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The child spends so much of their day there.
It's true.
And that they need to know if the child's behaving aggressively or more withdrawn, that there's really an emotional reason why.
And, you know, just as for people who work, whether it's inside of the home or outside of the home, the majority of their time, waking moments are spent with work. For children, the majority of their waking moments are spent in school and school-related things, whether it's friends from school or homework or going or coming. So school is a huge part of a child's life.
Right. And oftentimes we expect children to do certain things when, excuse me, their mind is filled with, you know, what they just saw Saturday night at home,
okay,
between their parents fighting,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
grandma coming to pick them up. And, you know, we can't expect that they're going to be able to do the academics if they're emotionally traumatized.
Right. I think that's such an important point for both grandparents, parents, and educators. You know, children, a lot of times people think that children are short adults, or in today's world, not so short adults, but they're children. And we do have to remember that they are as much a part of this trauma cycle, if you will, as the grandparents and the parents. What do you do as a grandparent?
You know, oftentimes children feel that this is their fault.
A very good point.
If they had been better children or obeyed mom or dad or done what mom or dad had asked, that they wouldn't have been abandoned or sent to somebody else's home to live. Even though that somebody else is their grandparent, they really want to be with their parent.
Right.
And
right.
So they tend to blame themselves, and they need a lot of reassurance that this was not their fault, that they had no control over their parents' behavior.
You know,
if only I had taken better care of mommy, then
right,
I would still be home.
That is such an important point, and I'm glad that you bring that up, because certainly we know that whether it's a divorce or whatever it is, children really do have a tendency to blame themselves.
Yeah, so we really have to work on their self-esteem and their self-image, and that this was not their fault.
Absolutely. And, you know, when there is a parent living with the grandparent in the home with the grandchild, it's really important to remind everybody that the children are not to blame for whatever the circumstance is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. We're going to take a break. But when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Sylvie DiToledo, author of Grandparents as Parents and founder and clinical director of Grandparents as Parents, a wonderful organization that has a wonderful website. I'll give you all that information when we come back. So don't go away. Welcome back to this edition of Mind Talk. My name is Dr. Pamela Brewer, and we are continuing an important conversation with Sylvie DiToledo, who is author of Grandparents as Parents, the second edition. And as she points out, the second edition includes many pieces of information that were not available in the first edition. Sylvie, when you've got a child or children living with their grandparents, what do they call their grandparents? Do they call them grandma? Do they call them mom? What are they supposed to call them?
You know, whatever the child feels comfortable with. Oftentimes they were already calling their grandma, you know, because they have a relationship with their grandparents. And so whatever names, I mean, in our family, my nephew, and that's how I got involved because my sister passed away and left a 7-year-old. And I saw firsthand the effects on families when they had to take in a grandchild. And so the families I was seeing in treatment were experiencing the same issues as my family, and the children were experiencing the same issues as my nephew. So, you know, my nephew already was calling his grandma Nana forever, you know, until he was 7, and so that's what he just continued. And some kids call them Nana, and some kids call them Grandma, and some kids call them, you know, Gigi for grandmother or great-grandmother. I mean, whatever the term is. And if at some point they start calling you mommy or daddy, that's perfectly okay, because the kids want to be like everyone else. And when they start school and they start saying, you know, hearing other kids talking about mommies and daddies, they want to be just like the other kids.
Okay. So that is okay to call
so
grandparents.
It's whatever the child and you are comfortable with.
Let's talk a little bit more about parents' legal rights. Would you recommend that parents who are taking on grandchildren do whatever they can to achieve some legal standing, or do you think it's better to wait until something comes up?
No, it's better to do it immediately, because if you wait until something comes up, it's too late. You know, because your adult child can come back and say, you know, I want my child, my mother won't let me have her even at 2 a.m, you know, and this child's been living with you for 3 years. The mother's been in and out of incarceration, and then she comes out and meets some new man who says, oh, you know, we can get money for this child, you know, the welfare or whatever. And so, you know, they can come at 2 and 3 a.m. and say, I want my child. If you have no paperwork, you are going to have to give them their child.
Wow.
And so you really need to get protection for the child as quickly as possible.
Are they able, is a grandparent able to register a child in school? I mean, if the child is now living with a grandparent, they may be living in a different state, in a different school district. It might all be new.
Well, we in California, we have something called the caregiver affidavit.
Okay.
And so that allows you, once you filled it out, to register a child for school and to get medical care. But again, that's another reason why it's important to get something from the court that says that you are legally allowed to do all of these things for the child.
You know, I can't say enough about the resilience, if you will, of both the children and the grandchildren who find themselves living in the circumstances that we are providing. As you think back over the years of the folks that you have worked with, or perhaps even in your own family, does any particular family or situation stand out for you?
You know, I just think that every family deserves a gold medal for what they're doing. For, you know, however they're doing it, they're doing it. And they're doing the best job they can with the tools that they have. And they are keeping their grandchildren together and safe and out of the foster care system. And for that, they're putting their whole lives on hold in order to do that.
They are indeed.
And they really deserve much more recognition than they're getting.
For those listening, can you talk a little bit more about the various resources that are available at the grandparentsasparents.org website? I was really impressed with all the information that you had at the site.
Well, you'll get a list of groups that are, I think there's a link to a list, AARP, but please feel free to call us. We will help you. We will help you get connected to a group in your area. We will help you start a group if that's what's necessary. If you need anything, we will try to link you up to whatever resources you need.
Let me just ask you one more question as we wind down. When, as a grandparent, your child comes to live with you, with his or her child, your child, as far as you know, doesn't have a mental illness, as far as you know, but it's just kind of living off of you, and your grandchild is seeing that. Do you have any concerns about that?
Generally, if that's happening, there are some mental health issues.
Okay.
And so there is something going on, whether it's depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's important to get to the root of what is causing that and getting your adult child, if they'll allow you to help them get some help, or saying that, you know, I'm willing to do this for 3 months, but within this time I need to see you. You know, develop a contract with them. I need to see you do these 10 things.
Okay.
And give a time frame for those things. And that will show you if your adult child is really, truly trying to get help for themselves.
Mm. And you do go into some detail in the book about developing contracts.
Yes, I do.
And
there's a whole chapter in the book as well on how to start a support group for relative caregivers.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the book is really comprehensive, and as is the website. Let me ask you this one more question before we leave you today. You're talking about a contract. So a contract has consequences if it is broken. In the case of a grandparent who has developed and has a signed contract with their adult child that X, Y, and Z is going to happen, X, Y, and Z doesn't happen. The grandparent is concerned about his or her grandchild being taken away. What do you do? What kinds of consequences make sense in these contracts?
Well, I think that you need to think out the contract thoroughly through before you even put it together. And what are you willing to use as a consequence if such and such doesn't happen? Because it is very important. I mean, it's extremely important to not say that you are going to put your child out if you really are not going to do that. Because once they've tested you and you have not followed through, you've lost, you know, any ability that they will believe that you will follow through.
And I would think that would be bad information, bad modeling for your grandchild as well.
Absolutely. So you might really think first, what are you able to do, and feel comfortable following through on before you make the consequence.
Okay. And this and so much more is in the book Grandparents as Parents, the second edition, written by Sylvie DiToledo, a licensed clinical social worker, founder and clinical director of Grandparents as Parents, Inc., which is a nonprofit based in Los Angeles, California. The co-author of Grandparents as Parents is Deborah Elder Brown. And there are many, many things at the grandparentsasparents.org website that will help you sort through some of the things that are going on in your life. I absolutely recommend this book to every grandparent, whether you are a grandparent and a parent right now, because as Sylvie has said, you know, really so many people who are grandparents are just one or two tragedies away from becoming the title of this book, Grandparents as Parents. Sylvie, is there anything that you would like to add as we close out today?
Just for everyone to know that it's not just for relative caregivers, but also for professionals who are working with this population, and students even who will be working with this population, to sensitize them to the needs and concerns of relative caregivers.
You know, I would think, I'm glad you mentioned students, because I would think that this would be an important part of a training cycle for any student who's planning on working in any human services area. So thank you for that. And Sylvie, would you again give out the phone number and the web address?
The website is www.grandparentsasparents.org.
Okay.
And the phone number is 818-264-0880.
And can you repeat that number one more time?
The phone number for Grandparents as Parents is 818-264-0880.
Okay, thank you again so very much for your time today, and thank you for this book. It absolutely fills a need that many of us are aware of but didn't have something to turn to offer for ourselves and for others. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All righty. You take care. Folks, this is Dr. Pamela Brewer. You have been listening to Mind Talk. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown for 26x2 Productions. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. That's 301-654-5286. The email address for the program is mynndtalk@aol.com. The web address, mindtalk.com. And folks, you remember, if it's unacceptable, then that's what it is. Just plain old unacceptable. You take care.